Welcome to this portion of Focal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now we're going to talk with Dr. Richard Weikart. Weikart is spelled W-E-I-K-A-R-T. He has written a new book called The Death of Humanity and the Case for Life. He may be better known, actually, for his more famous book called From Darwin to Hitler. And in fact, the website you can look up for more information, including this book and all the books Dr. Weikart has written, is darwintohitler.com. Dr. Weikart, thank you so much for coming back on the program. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Sure. Okay, now, it is almost a maximum that people should not invoke the name of Hitler or the Nazis and say, oh, this is just like the Nazis. People overdo it. No question about that. But there are some lessons to learn from the real Hitler and the real Nazis that ought not to be forgotten. And you show in this book that, unfortunately, Hitler and Nazis, even though they're all over, they're finished, some of the same principles that guided them in that horrible, dark chapter of history are still with us today, maybe in more subtle ways, but they're still there.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, obviously, Hitler does get invoked way too much. But interestingly, I think it's strange that people would think that a historian shouldn't be able to talk about Hitler, since I've done a good deal of study on the Nazi period and Hitler. What's interesting, though, in my new book, The Death of Humanity, I actually take a broader approach, too. And I look at how there are a lot of different secular ideologies that influenced Hitler that even though Nazism is dead. Well, not completely. There are still some neo-Nazis out there, but it's pretty fringe these days. Still, there are a lot of things that influenced Hitler that have continued on to be influential today. And in fact, I'm going to pick up that theme, too, in my book that's coming out later this year called Hitler's Religion, where I pick up that theme, too, and show that. I mean, there are thinkers like Schopenhauer, Nietzsche, social Darwinism, other kinds of movements, eugenics movement. There were a lot of different movements that were around, and many of these were considered fairly progressive. They were secular in their orientation to a large degree, and many of these influenced Hitler's thinking. And so, even though Nazism as a movement was crushed in World War II, many of these ideas that have been percolating out there in a lot of intellectual spheres continued on and even continue to have a lot of resonance. And maybe give one interesting example here. Martin Heidegger is still considered by many philosophers one of the most important philosophers of the entire 20th century. And yet he joined the Nazi Party, and even though he distanced himself from it sort of in the middle of the Nazi period, sort of kept quiet, and then later after the Nazi period he tried to cover up his involvement with it, a lot of historians and philosophers and historians of philosophy have shown that there were some interesting roots of his thinking that resonated with Nazis. And what I find interesting, too, is that if this guy is the most famous philosopher of the entire 20th century, why wasn't there anything in his philosophy that would have kept him from Nazism?
Mm-hmm. Great question. What about Planned Parenthood, or the forerunner to Planned Parenthood, Margaret Sanger, in terms of sharing information about eugenics with Nazi doctors?
Oh, yeah. There was a lot of interaction, in fact, between the Nazi physicians, the Nazi eugenics movement, and the American eugenics movement. And Sanger was one of those individuals who was very involved in that at the time. One of the more interesting individuals, though, that I point up to in my book, Death of Humanity, that I think is really fascinating, that I learned a lot about, in fact, as I was working on the book, was Oliver Wendell Holmes, Jr., who was one of the most famous judges of the early 20th century.
And a hero to liberals.
Bell decision.
Yeah, Buck versus Bell. Three generations of imbeciles is enough.
Yeah, that's right. He wrote the Buck versus Bell decision that made compulsory sterilization the law of the, well, didn't make it law of the land. It made it allowed to be the law of the land anywhere that passed it, any of the states, and there was over half the states in the U.S. that had these sterilization laws. In his private correspondence, he made very clear that he didn't believe that humans had a right to life, and he supported infanticide of people that he said were below the grade, I think was the term he used, or something like that. So, you know, he had no respect for human life qua human life. He just thought power should decide. In fact, he had a very, very strong social Darwinist mentality. If it's just a matter of the struggle for existence, and whoever has more power prevails.
Wow. He must have been too jaded by his experience in the Civil War. There's a book out called Imbeciles by Adam Cohen. And here's, you know, he's a liberal guy, but it's very scholarly, and it's all about that Buck versus Bell decision. Mm-hmm. And he's basically, you know, it's interesting. I was reading part of that book, and I thought of your research, and it's really the same kind of thing from Darwin to Hitler, although he, you know, tries to apologize for Darwin at the end of the book, you know, hey, this is a misreading of Darwin. But still, you know, no Darwin, no Hitler, as Dr. Kennedy once put it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Basic idea that once you come up with the idea that all human life is not equal and all human life doesn't have value, then you sort of open up things to all sorts of ideology. And as I suggest in my book, Death of Humanity, there's a lot of different directions people can run with this. I mean, you know, politically they could be on the side of communism, and I do talk about Marxism and other kinds of non-Marxist socialism that degraded human life by construing humans as just a product of their environment, just whatever their environment upbringing was, that's, you know, determines who you are. And so they really didn't have a value for the human individual, and so how many human individuals they have to crush to produce their supposed utopian society, and of course their utopian society never even came, but still, that's perfectly fine. Or you can end up on the fascist side or the Nazi side of the political spectrum too. So there's a lot of different permutations of this, but really what I try to track and look at is the way that a whole host of secular ideologies have brought us to the point where human life does not have value as of itself, and so we end up with these notions of human inequality. Some human lives have value, others don't. In our society today, it gets spun out as infants before they are born don't have value, at least in the progressives' eyes. Unfortunately, there's a lot of people who are waking up to that reality that they actually do have value, but unfortunately the law of the land still is that abortion's allowed. Or at the end of life, once people no longer are suffering pain, or if they have lost their mental abilities and such, then these people no longer have value either. So we're once again in a boat where we're trying to decide which people have value and which don't. And we don't have any moral fulcrum to decide that any longer.
Here's a quote from Adolf Hitler that's in your book on page 65. It's actually from Mein Kampf. The real founders of everything we include in the word humanity, the human culture, the results of art, science, and invention, which we see before us, are almost exclusively the creative product of an Aryan. I know you pronounce it Aryan. But this very fact permits the not unfounded deduction that he alone was the creator of a higher human life, and thus is the prototype of what we today mean by the word man. Now, here's from a guy, Adolf Hitler, in his book Mein Kampf, 1925. Here's from a guy who basically said that the master race should live, but inferiors, the Untermensch, should not live. The Jews, the Gypsies, the Slavs, homosexuals, disobedient Christians who were getting in, you know, interfering with the Nazi plans. Explain the Holocaust and the link between Darwinism.
Yeah, well, ultimately, Darwinism basically did a number of things. One, it blurred the distinction between humans and animals. And by the way, we're still living with that. There's a lot of animal rights activists who are saying that animals have just as much right to life as humans, or better way of saying this, humans have no more right to life than animals. So it blurred the distinction between humans and animals, and that sort of opened up the door to degrading views of human life. But also, interestingly, and this is one point that a lot of people don't seem to grasp, is that Darwin, in his book Descent of Man, talked about the origins of morality, and he believed that morality was simply a trait that evolved as well. And if that's true, then there's no such thing as objective human rights, objective morality. And in fact, many Darwinists in the late 19th century, including Darwin himself, overtly said that there's no such thing as objective morality, objective truths about morals. And so this then opens the door then to subjective truths. Then another thing that Darwinism did, a third thing, and that actually there's more than this, but a third thing that it did was that it showed that species and individuals within species were unequal. They had different kinds of traits. Some were fit for their environment. Some were more or less fit than their environments. And so it gave this mentality that certain individuals within species, because they had to compete for scarce resources in the Darwinian struggle for existence, that some of those will be able to compete and have value and such. And so the eugenics movement came along and used this word inferior quite a bit and talked about how certain people were inferior because they were considered to be those that were not able to compete, not able to have this sort of traits that they thought were valuable. If you fast forward to today, a lot of people have rejected some of these notions of the competition to the death, let's say, of Darwinism. But the mentality of human inequality is really emerging back in our day, ironically, because a lot of people claim to be very egalitarian, but on the other hand, they're trying to determine which human lives have value and which don't, just like many social Darwinists and eugenicists did in the late 19th and early 20th century. So just as an example, Peter Singer, the famous bioethicist at Princeton University, along with a number of other bioethicists, tries to distinguish between what he calls persons and non-persons. It's not enough to be a human being, he says, because it's not being human that gives us value, according to Singer. But it's whether or not you have certain traits, such as rationality, and that rationality seems to be one of the big ones that they use here, that's what gives you value. And so people who have less rationality have less value in their thinking. And so Singer has said forthrightly that it's okay to kill an infant even after it's born. He said birth isn't that big an episode because it doesn't have as much rationality as other mammals. But it's wrong to kill an ape or a dog or a full-grown pig because they have enough rationality somehow to give them value, he thinks.
Isn't that amazing? And didn't you even point out in the book that Singer himself had some grandparents who were killed in the Holocaust? But how about a quick comment about the Holocaust itself in terms of, you know, you have said in previous occasions that essentially what the Darwinists, or, I'm sorry, what the Nazis were trying to do was speed up Darwinism or speed up evolution, exactly. To kind of help it along.
Exactly. And interestingly, there's people let me say a little bit about that first, and then I'll go into it today. They were trying to speed up evolution. They thought that since he thought that the Aryan race was the highest race, he thought that by killing off the inferior races, that would actually make human evolution move forward. In fact, in a very twisted kind of way, and I show this extensively in my earlier book, Hitler's Ethic, he thought that because the Aryans were the most moral race, he thought that by killing off the Jews, whom he considered an immoral race, he thought they were biologically immoral, he thought that by killing them off, he actually would improve morality. He thought he would make the world a more moral place by allowing the Aryans to supplant the Jews and other so-called inferior races there. Interestingly,
Can I interrupt you real fast?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Suppose a Jewish person was in Hitler's hands, and this Jewish person said, okay, I'm converting, I'm becoming a Nazi, and I'm joining your party. He still would have that person killed, right? Because it's the Jewish blood coursing through their veins. It's a pure racist thing, correct?
Exactly. And yes, the Nazis were biological determinists. They thought everything was determined by your hereditary makeup. They didn't know about DNA yet, but by your genes and everything. In fact, I have a whole chapter in my book, Death of Humanity, on biological determinism, where I look not just at the Nazis, which are one key example of that, but I look at examples today of biological determinism too, and how it ends up demeaning and devaluing human life.
All right, well, we're almost out of time, and I'm so sorry. We've just kind of scratched the surface, but there's a great quote in your book, in the conclusion, if Christianity is true, then human life has value. How about a closing thought on a positive note, and we'll end on that.
Yeah, I actually do close my book with a Jesus quote where he says that the thief comes to steal and kill and to destroy, but I have come that you might have life and that you might have it more abundantly. And one of the lessons that I want people to take away from my book is that human life does have value because we're created in the image of God, and therefore these secular ideologies fail. And I think a lot of the secularists know that. And I try to show a lot of the contradictions in secularist thought because I think a lot of secularists actually do know that human life has value, even though they try to deny it overtly. But I'm trying to sort of put it in their face in this book, and show them that the answer that Jesus has is the real answer.
and doing it in a very nice way. I appreciate this in a very scholarly way, too. Richard Weikart, W-E-I-K-A-R-T, the name of the book, The Death of Humanity and the Case for Life. The website, you can find more information, darwintohitler.com. Thank you, Dr. Weikart. Always a pleasure, and I'd love to have you back on again.
Yes, thanks for having me. I'd love to be back on.
Thank you now. Bye-bye.